Welcome to the Nonprofit Mastermind Podcast. I'm Brooke Ritchie Babbage. I've been in the social impact game for 25 years as a social justice lawyer turned two-time nonprofit founder and leader turned growth strategist and coach for leaders around the country. I grew my nonprofit from me and an intern in a tiny closet to a high-impact seven-figure organization. And along the way, I learned so much about how to build an organization that has real impact and how to do it without burning out. In this podcast, I share the nuts and bolts of all of it so you can do that too. We dive into the mindset, strategies, and tactics of how to scale a high-impact organization and how to do it in a way that's truly sustainable. Have you ever found yourself trying to explain what your organization does and is all about to someone who's just not getting it? It seems so clear in your own mind, and you feel like what you're saying makes sense, but it's just not clicking for some reason. In today's episode, I'm going to break down exactly how to overcome this problem, how to translate your work in a way that connects with any potential donor or supporter, even one who isn't necessarily from your sector or familiar with your issue. Specifically, I'm going to share the three parts of what I call the stakeholder communication bridge, creating a connection between your work and wherever the potential support is situated. Now, I'm passionate about this because it used to be a real problem for me. When I first started my organization, I was not great at bridging the gap between my own understanding of what we did and other people who were outside of my sort of immediate psychographic world. I had been practicing social impact law for years, and the mission and work of my organization felt really rooted in that world. Anytime I was communicating with a potential board member or donor who was a lawyer or who worked in policy or even government, we would connect. They got what I meant when I referenced young people being disempowered by their experiences in various New York City government agencies. All I had to do was mention it in a sentence, and so much about why I was doing what I was doing just clicked. As we grew, however, I started to find myself more and more in spaces with people who weren't social justice lawyers or even in the social impact space. And I wasn't great at getting them to understand what we were really about. I could state our mission. I could explain it really well. I could describe our activities and our programs, but the what, the impact that we were creating sometimes didn't land. I remember applying for a grant and meeting with a panel of selectors. You had to sort of, the third round was this five-person sort of conversation. And most of the people in this panel were small business founders. They were entrepreneurs. And I started to walk through my sort of regular talking points about how the law is broken when it came to low-income teens. And one of the people on the panel stopped me and said, "Really? Broken? That seems a little harsh. Like, what do you mean?" So I explained, well, there are these laws that ostensibly are aimed at protecting the rights of low-income kids in schools and foster care, et cetera. These are the kids we work with. But the laws often fail at doing that because the young people themselves don't understand their rights. And so they can't advocate within these various systems. Now, that sentence makes a lot of sense to me because I had spent at that point 12 years working with young people in the law, in these systems, in foster care systems, in criminal justice systems. But I got blind stares from a lot of these people. Now, remember, these are people who had spent just as many years, 12, 15 years, building for-profit businesses in some really interesting spaces, but they didn't know anything about kids in foster care. They had not spent a single day thinking about what self-advocacy meant and why it was important in implementing anti-poverty laws. And so the questions I was getting were things like, but if the laws are good, right? We have good laws. Why don't they work? And if they aren't good, then why aren't you just changing the laws? Like, what does the whole sort of self-advocacy thing have to do with it? Why is that the impact you want to have? Very good questions all. But I remember thinking at the time, they just don't get what we're doing. Like, they don't get our what. right? They get our why, they get our mission, they get our how, they get our programs. That's why I made it this far in the process. But the thing that's not connecting is, what's the change? Like, what's the impact we're having? And like, why that impact? So in the end, I didn't get the funding, but their feedback, although really hard to hear at the time, was accurate and really instructive. And it started me down a path that ultimately transformed my fundraising. What they were basically saying was that I hadn't eliminated the friction in their minds around my work. They liked what they were hearing, but they just didn't get it. Mental friction is the main reason that people who would otherwise have an affinity for your work, who would otherwise care about your mission and would want to invest in your vision, don't. They are confused about something. There's some question or set of questions that just haven't been answered in their minds. And they may not always be aware of what those questions are. That's why we call it friction. There's just something getting in the way. Now, the more similar these people are to you, the less friction there is. That's why if you run, say, a climate change organization, it's easier to raise money from people who are vocal about caring about climate change, right? There's less friction. They have fewer questions. They're more likely to get what you're doing and why, without you having to go through the work of articulating it. But our job as we grow our organization is to go beyond these obvious supporters. We have to get good at reducing the friction in a broader, more expansive community of people. We need to anticipate the questions they're asking themselves and answer them. That reduces the friction. And one of the most common sources of friction is around the articulation of the what, right? What are you all about? What exactly are you changing in the world, right? What is your impact? Now, the good news is, spoiler alert, over the years, I got better at this. I realized that effective fundraising, network expansion, supporter and community building, effective communication with stakeholders is way more science than art. As honestly, most things are. Most things that we do as we grow our organization are not mystical or magical or by gut or instinct. And it's not something that just some people can just do and some people can't. I was a literal lawyerly Virgo. I thought and still do think in bullet points, not stories. And yet I knew that if I could just reverse engineer the elements of effective communication, I could get good at this. I could bridge this distance between me and people who, if I could get them to see my vision, would really love it. That's how I came up with the stakeholder communication bridge. I knew that I was good at talking to lawyers and policymakers and educators about our mission and work, but bridging that gap between my understanding of our work and that of people outside of my closest psychographic sphere, that I had to get better at. And this bridge is how I learned to do it. By focusing on the elements of this bridge, I was able to raise money, bring people onto my board, create really exciting partnerships with people who had never heard of social justice law until they came across our organization. Now, there are two things that you have to understand in order for this bridge, this stakeholder communication bridge, to be effective. Two pillars, let's say, that hold up the bridge, not to strain the metaphor too much. First, this one's really important. What I'm talking about here is not a nice to have. You have to see this as community building and fundraising 101. This is foundational. If you're going to grow, you must be able to build a robust community of stakeholders and supporters, board members, donors, funders, partners, ambassadors, advocates. This means that people have to see their own passions and interests and beliefs and experiences in your work. They have to have a shared affinity with what you do. You have to build the skill of anticipating and responding to the sources of friction that get in the way of shared affinity. If you don't do this, you will not grow. Second, you have to get out of your own head about who you think the right people are. And I put that in quotes because it's not a thing, right? It's not always obvious who the people are who will be most passionate about the change you're trying to bring about in the world. That's why when we talk about, say, donor profiles or donor archetypes, which are very, very important, and I will put some resources in the show notes where I have blog posts and a great podcast episode where I talk about donor attraction and I talk about the importance of really understanding who your donors are. When I was learning about all of this, we talked about sort of donor profiles in terms of demographics, right? Are they women? Are they parents? Are they teachers? Do they live in the Midwest or New York? I think that that is misleading because demographics aren't going to tell you what people believe, what they are excited about, what they care about, what they are afraid of, what makes them angry, what makes them excited, what inspires them. And those are the things that build shared affinity. So you cannot make assumptions about what people look like, what they do for a living, or what they care about based on, as I did when I first started, whether they had been lawyers, right? Or whether they understood childcare policy. One of the most effective fundraisers I've ever known ran a social justice theater organization for young people here in New York City, where I live. And as the organization grew, the people on their board, their longest giving and biggest gift donors, were often not theater people. These were hard-nosed business people, phenomenally wealthy hedge fund founders, ex-football players, people who, on the surface, seemed to have nothing in common with the very artsy young people in the program. But, and here's the magic of this leader, who was, as I said, a phenomenal fundraiser. She didn't actually focus on theater or even art or even social justice as the source of potential affinity. For all of the people on her board and in her donor base, the deeper affinity they felt was about the type of community that theater creates for the young people at a time in their lives when they really need community. And that resonated with them. Each of the people, and I did some research with the board to help them grow and to focus on their fundraising strategy and strategic plan. So I got to talk to a lot of the people that were some of the deepest sort of stakeholders for the organization. And what I heard was that each of them remembered times in their lives when their after-school club in high school or their football team helped them feel like they had a place they belonged during a time in life when they really needed that, when that really matters. And that was a powerful connection that they felt to the organization. The theater, the art, the social justice was secondary. What we do on the surface of our organization is often secondary. The impact we're creating, the change we're creating in the world is deeper. And that's where the source of affinity and connection lives. So learning how to communicate this deeper impact, this change in the world, in a way that pushes through any perceived differences between who they seem to be and what you're doing on the surface so that they can find their shared affinity. That's how we grow. And that's what this bridge does. So there are three elements of the communication bridge: problem, approaches, and outcomes. And I'm going to walk through each of them and how you build this bridge. When you are describing what you do, there is this formula, right? Problem, approaches, and outcome. You want to start by making sure you clearly articulate the problem you're solving, the reason you are doing the work that you're doing. So remember I said the bridge is about smoothing out surfaces of potential friction, right? Anticipating and answering the questions people have. When you describe your problem, you have to answer the question in people's minds, why should I care about this? Right? Very often when we describe a problem, it is factual, right? It's about data. It's about, you know, how big a problem is or how many young people are suffering. Those are important. But the question that people are trying to figure out, again, sometimes a few layers beneath the surface, is why is this a problem I care about? Right? And you have to get past that question if they're going to be a potential supporter. The key here is to be able to communicate the problem and the need in a way that makes it compelling to other people who may not have the same knowledge or understanding that you have. To do that, you want to highlight three things in your articulation of the problem. First, what is the problem? What precisely is going wrong in the world? Second, priority. Why is this an important problem? More specifically, what are the implications to society, to an issue that the potential supporter cares about if the problem isn't solved? So there's the problem, and then why is this a problem that should take priority? And then third, urgency. Why is this a problem that needs to be solved now, immediately, now? Right? Why can't we wait a year? So if you are running, say, a food pantry, one of the reasons we sort of hold things like food pantries up as a model of nonprofit that is often easiest to fundraise for, get support for, it's not just because it's one of the oldest models around, but the problem is clear, right? What precisely is going wrong is clear. The priority, the implications to society, a community, to people are visually obvious, and the urgency is clear. Right? It needs to be solved today because these people will be starved in a week or a month, right? So what is the problem? Why is it a priority? And what is the urgency? That's the breakdown of your problem articulation. It isn't just X percentage of people don't have access to Y resource, right? That's the statement of the problem we are often trained to make, but you want to actually pull that apart and make sure that you're addressing the problem, the priority, and the urgency. This is a really common source of friction, and it comes up really often when we're too close to the work ourselves. That was a big part of my problem, right? I had been doing the work that was at the core of my organization for over a decade. I felt it. It was a really urgent problem for me and the people that I worked with. It was a real priority for me because of what I cared about and what I valued. And what I had to learn, and what I'll say here is, you need to make sure that your problem, the priority, and the urgency are felt by everyone you're talking to. That's the first part of this bridge between you and the person you're talking to. So you want to spend some time articulating the urgency and priority elements so that you can make sure that you're not talking about your work in a way that is really just about your urgency and your priority. When you get to the point where you can articulate why a problem has implications for society, why it should be a priority societally, then you know that you're able to talk to people who may not have proximity, knowledge, or direct understanding of the problem themselves. I sometimes have the folks in my coaching program do the so what activity, right? So this is a problem. So what? Well, because this. Well, so what? Well, because this, right? And you keep pushing and you keep pushing. You keep asking, so what? And we do that to make sure that their answers aren't some version of, and this happens all the time, not just in nonprofit work, but in life. You want to make sure that if you do that, your answers aren't some version of, because good people should care about this, right? That's really what we're trying to unearth is deep down, most of us think, if you're a good person, you'll understand why what I'm saying is a priority and why it's urgent. You have to push through that and articulate priority and urgency in ways that aren't about sort of who that person is and that don't take for granted that they will just get it if they're good. Okay, second part of the bridge. This is about approaches. What approaches are you using to solve the problem? Now here, it's really important to distinguish between approaches and activities. Approaches or strategies concern the general ways that you will achieve a goal. The general approaches used to achieve a goal. Activities are the specific actions that you'll take to carry out the approach or the strategy. Often, we are clear about the activities that we're going to engage in. Meetings with community members, holding workshops for parents or children, providing testimony for legislators. I did that a lot. But the impact that your organization has is brought about by the core approaches to solving the problems. The activities, the tactics, the programs, these can change over time as your external reality shift and you learn more from the evaluation of your work, but your core approaches, your belief about what levers you need to pull to really move the ball down the field, those core approaches or your belief about what really works don't change, right? You have what we often call a theory of change. There's a mission and you have a theory, you have a belief about the best approaches to take to achieve that mission. And the activities, the ways that you carry out the approach are sort of lower down, right? They're more flexible and more fluid. So here's an example. An approach might be legislative advocacy, right? Pushing legislators to take action. The activities are visiting the offices of key city council people, providing testimony at legislative hearings. Those are things, actions you will take, things you will do to carry out the approach of legislative advocacy. Another one, this came up in a coaching call a few weeks ago, financial education, right, is one of the general approaches. The activities are after school workshops for teenagers and the development of an online tech tool for at-home learning. Those are programs, those are activities, but the general approach is providing financial education to this community of people. Now, the problem with staying at the activity level without being clear about the overall approach is that people listening can actually begin to hear just sort of a menu of things that you're doing. And we leave it to them to do the sense making, to figure out what it all adds up to. Once people have to start doing their own sense making about what you're actually doing, there's friction, right? We run the risk of losing them. The question they're asking here is, what does this all add up to, right? What's the impact? What's the thing that you're doing? Sometimes when you've described your work, and this, again, using myself as an example, this is a big challenge. I would describe our really exciting programs with teen dads and young girls in foster care. And I'd get to the end of the description and I'd think it was really compelling and they'd be leaning in and they're like, awesome. But like, what do you do? Like what's the thing that you do? And I remember thinking, I just told you, right? When you're talking to potential funders or donors and you describe what you're doing, what they want is to understand the core strategies that are part of your theory of change. The activities, the programs are just examples of your strategy. So the friction you're working against here is, but why did you choose those things, right? What's the thing, what's the bigger thing you are doing when you add up all of these activities and programs? They want to know what you actually believe works to solve the problem you've articulated. The third element of the bridge is to what end? So we've articulated the problem with priority, precision, and urgency. We have explained the core strategies that we believe will help solve that problem. And the third piece of the bridge to really finish off that connection between where you are and where the potential supporter is the intended impact. The results that your organization will hold itself accountable for achieving within a reasonable timeframe. This is about making clear what is the anticipated change in the status quo that you anticipate as a result of the strategies you articulated. Now, there's a very specific friction that you are responding to here. The question in people's minds is, if I invest, what does it add up to? This is not the mission, which is far off in the future. This is about real change. How is the world? How are these kids? How is this park going to be different in a year? I'm going to give you $20,000 and I want to know what is going to happen on the other end of your work with my $20,000. How will the targets' lives be better concretely because of my investment in your work and because of your work? You want to be able to articulate a concise statement that says something like the following. When we have done these things, we believe that X, Y, and Z will be different in the world. The closer you can get to that sentence, the better you will be at articulating your impact. It can feel really messy. There are all of these outcomes that we're tracking and all of these things we're trying to do in the world. And it cannot be messy if you are going to bridge the gap between you and potential supporters. Your impact cannot be messy. When we have done these things, these strategies, we believe that X, Y, and Z will be different, period. This is how supporters will know what you're actually measuring, what you're holding yourself accountable to. So, to recap, there are three elements of the stakeholder communication bridge: articulating your problem in a way that is precise and that articulates urgency and priority, articulating your approaches, not your menu of activities and programs, right? What are you actually doing to solve the problem? And making sure that your impact is very clear and very concise. Mastering these three elements will dramatically improve your ability to connect with any type of potential donor, because it isn't based on who they are in the world, what they already know, what they already understand. It will allow you to push past the layers of seeming different and get to the core of potential affinity and to grow your community of supporters and stakeholders with far less friction. That's it for this week. I will see you back here next week for more Mastermind. Thanks so much for joining me this week. If you enjoy this podcast, I would love for you to leave a rating and a review. I read every single one and they really do matter. I also share extra tidbits and resources building on what we talk about here in my newsletter, Leadership Forward 321. You can sign up by texting the word impact to 66866. And finally, definitely check out the links and resources that I mentioned in this episode at brookritchiebabbage.com/podcast. See you next week.